Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Mixed Martial Arts Podcast brought to you by ESPN Plus, the home of UFC 255. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today, as always, by John Litterine. If you're out there on Twitter, give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at Roto Jake. Today, we're going to be making our biggest picks for the biggest fights at UFC 255. That's Davison Figueroa against Alex Perez. Before we jump in, I want to mention an awesome promo we're running with our friends at ESPN Plus. If you sign up through the links on our site, you get a free month of RotoWire that's full service, all sports, all DFS tools. Just go to rotowire.com/subscribe and locate the ESPN Plus promo option on the bottom, or if you already have an account, click on subscribe now in the top right to begin. John, been about a month since we last spoke here. We've had the crazy Khabib win and ensuing retirement, lightweight title pictures wide open, and then also the light heavyweight title picture is in limbo a little bit. Of course, we've got Jan Blachowicz taking over here. Should he fight Glover Teixeira? Should he fight Israel Adesanya? A lot of things left there to talk about. Any storylines hit you, or you got any takes there?
You know, that one's interesting. I think you could probably go either way. I guess from a pure mixed martial arts standpoint, I'd probably rather see Blachowicz fight Adesanya. It's hard to say that Teixeira doesn't deserve it. He's won 5 fights in a row, and this is a guy who, not all that long ago, certainly looked like he was on the decline. But then if you go big picture, Teixeira turned 41 years old next month. So, for example, even if he got his shot at Blachowicz early next year and did win, the odds of him ever retaining over, you know, multiple title defenses is really small. So as far as like the good of the company, I think it's probably Adesanya. Although if you want to just talk about sheer argument for what's best for a division, it's probably Teixeira.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Adesanya one definitely does a lot more buys. He's a budding superstar in the division. You know, the MMA purist will want to see the Teixeira fight. Let him fight. Give him his last chance at a title, basically, and then, you know, who knows how much he'll try to defend it afterwards. But so it'll be interesting to see what the UFC wants to do. Of course, the whole Adesanya moving up a belt surprised me a little bit. And then I thought, oh, well, if Adesanya becomes champ, then they can just run it back with Bones to get his belt back. And maybe that's what they're thinking is going to happen here. I thought Bones was putting on weight to go to heavyweight. So there's a lot here going on in those two divisions.
There definitely is. And we're kind of still at the point, I think, where with COVID and everything, you don't really know what's going to happen. You know, These are all tentative plans, and there seems to be a lot of fights, understandably, that are really falling apart right now. So until there's a vaccine and all that, it's kind of just nothing, just tentative. You know, there's nothing. We've seen fights canceled all the time for COVID reasons and injury reasons. So even if a fight does get made, that doesn't mean that it's going to be the fight that eventually happens.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. That's an excellent transition, because we are back in Vegas for UFC 255. Vegas compared to Fight Island, I mean, Vegas has been an absolute disaster. You got people testing positive left and right, bad weight cuts. It seems like Fight Island is very regimented, and that's helped the fighters in a way. You have to meet, you know, in Vegas at this point, then you fly to Abu Dhabi, you know, then you do your quarantine for a couple of days, until your test is clear, you know, and you're getting tested periodically. They can kind of snuff out a lot of those positive tests by having a little bit more regiment there, but it doesn't seem to quite be the case in Vegas. You know, last week was supposed to be a 12 fight card. We ended up with 10 after a couple fights got scrapped, a couple good ones got scrapped, and that really makes things difficult on DraftKings players. Right now, though, we've got a 12 fight card here, starting with a flyweight championship. Well, two flyweight championships, I should say. Deiveson Figueiredo against Alex Perez. Figueiredo 9,000 on DraftKings. Perez 7,200. Figueiredo, the current champ, is a -300 betting favorite. Perez +250 betting underdog. The odds to finish on this are -475. They're changing a little bit, but when I looked at the odds to finish marks the other day, 10 of the 12 fights there were only two fights plus money to go the distance here. So it looks like there's going to be a lot of finishes. We have the smaller cage, which generally suggests a lot more finishes, especially when it comes to the smaller weight classes like flyweight. So I guess, John, you know, I think we're both going to be on the same page with this fight, but I guess talk about Deiveson Figueiredo, his path to get here. You know, could he get value at 9,000 on DraftKings, and I guess his chances of getting a finish?
Well, you're right. I mean, -475 is a massive number for a flyweight fight to finish. The general rule is the lower the weight class, the more likely it is to see the final bell, for obvious reasons. Heavyweights hit harder, all that kind of stuff. This was scheduled to be Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt. Garbrandt tore a bicep and had to withdraw. There's no doubt that a Garbrandt fight would have done a better pay-per-view buy rate, simply because he's much better known than Perez. But when you actually look at it, Perez is a much more deserving choice. Garbrandt was 1-4, is 1-3 in his past four fights. He's never had a professional fight at flyweight. So, you know, I'm a pretty big believer that you shouldn't just be handing out title shots, you know, just because of name value. And it's hard to, not only, it'd be one thing if Cody was racking it up at bantamweight and then decided to drop down. You know, he's been struggling, so to drop him down and just hand him a title shot would have been ridiculous. But the story of this fight is definitely Figueiredo, who has really quickly established himself as one of the best fighters in the UFC in any division. He fought Joseph Benavidez twice recently. He fought him this past February, Figueiredo missed weight, thus he was ineligible to win the title. He crushed Benavidez, knocked him out in just over a round. The two fought again this past July, at which point Benavidez was submitted by Figueiredo. And Figueiredo, obviously, that time, since he made weight, won the belt. The Brazilian is a legitimate, all-around, high-level mixed martial artist. He's fast. He has excellent power for a smaller guy, and he's obviously really talented on the mat. And this is a guy who I don't think is getting a lot of the publicity and the love he deserves. He's not a well-known fighter, and I do think part of that is due to the fact that traditionally the smaller weight classes just don't get the same publicity that the higher weight classes do. I think part of that is just Yeah, just in all sports, really. If you look at boxing, heavyweights are what is always talked about. Same thing kind of goes in MMA. But Figueiredo is certainly talented enough to hold on to the belt for an extended period of time. This guy's totally legitimate. Alex Perez, his challenger on Saturday, is an interesting fighter. He's kind of bounced between flyweight and bantamweight in his career. His biggest problem by far is the fact that he has missed weight a half dozen times in his pro career, which in that what that tells me is that the UFC didn't think they had any other options, because throwing a guy who's missed weight in his career a half dozen times into the main event of a pay-per-view is extremely, extremely risky. If he misses weight on Friday, you're going to end up in the same exact situation where Perez, if the fight happens, where Perez isn't eligible to win the belt. So that tells me that the UFC just didn't think they had any better options. If you want to go to a common opponent type thing, Perez is 6-1 in the UFC. His only loss was at the hands of Joseph Benavidez, who I just mentioned. Figueiredo defeated twice.
Yeah, and convincingly, too. Those weren't close fights.
No, they were not at all. And actually, the second fight, Figueiredo looked even better than the first. He's legitimately getting better. Perez is an inch taller. Figueiredo has a 3-inch reach edge. And I think you're looking at something here where I think Perez will be somewhat competitive. Benavidez obviously, honestly, wasn't competitive in either of the two Figueiredo fights. I think Perez will probably do a bit better than that. Mm-hmm. But I'm really partial. When you get to a flyweight division, I'm really partial to guys that have legitimate power. There are not a lot of guys in the division with legitimate knockout power. That's just the size and the weight class the guys compete in. Figueiredo has that. And I think that is a big deal moving forward. When you have so many guys who look at, even if you look at Demetrius Johnson, the king of the flyweights forever, cardio was obviously off the charts, wrestling was great, but no one would ever call Demetrius a power puncher. So Figueiredo has something that most guys in the division do not have. As far as looking at it from a DraftKings standpoint, I'm not particularly interested in Perez is an underdog simply because I think his whole path to victory would be based around his wrestling. And there is a little bit of room there. Perez lands 3.03 takedowns per 15 minutes, which is obviously a solid number. And Figueiredo defends them at just 61%, which is, slightly below average. But then the problem is if Perez does get Figueiredo to the mat, you're looking at a situation where Figueiredo's elite submission game can come into play. So again, 9,000 is an expensive price tag. I might just fade this fight entirely. But if you told me I had to pick one, I'd probably pick Figueiredo. I'm definitely picking Figueiredo to win. I'd probably pick him too at 9,000 and try and find some other way to work underdogs into my lineup.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 9,000, he's the fourth most expensive fighter on this card. You've got Shevchenko at 9,600. We'll talk about that in a bit. Luis Cosque is 9,300. Daniel Rodriguez, I think, is 9,100. So again, you get a guy with his power for the fourth highest salary. I can try to live with that. And I think I'm going to have a decent amount of exposure with the lineups I decide to play here. Want to hit on a couple of points with this fight. One, great blog post by one of our former contributors, Richard A. Mann. I just put it on my Twitter if you want to take a look at it. He goes into the stats here to really illustrate the power of Benavidez. And I want to mention that the average – so he knocked down Benavidez twice – or Figueiredo did, the power of Figueiredo. That's what I'm going for. He knocked down Benavidez twice to give him 8 knockdowns in his 9 UFC fights. So his average knockdowns per 15 minutes of fight time the average knockdowns per 15 minutes of fight time for ranked flyweights – is 0.45, and Deiveson Figueiredo's mark is 1.37, so pretty much triple that mark. When you extrapolate some of those numbers out in other divisions, I mean, like, he's right up there in terms of like Francis Ngannou when you talk about relative power. The power is definitely there. The finishing power is there, which is wild because he only averages 2.8 significant strikes landed per minute. So you can tell that he's very efficient and good at picking his shots and is very good at dialing in for the kills. So I like him for the finish. Obviously, Vegas likes him for the finish. I think he's a great play on DraftKings. The other thing that has to be talked about with this fight in general You kind of alluded to it with Perez, is the weight cutting issues. I mean, Figueiredo has in the past had some weight cutting issues of his own. The first fight between him and Benavidez, he missed weight. So even though he got the win, he couldn't become champion. That's why they needed the rematch in the first place, even though it wasn't really, you know, the result wasn't all that convincing. But Figueiredo was able to really cement that and leave no doubt out there. There's a tweet and a report from Brett Okamoto of ESPN today. Apparently, Figueiredo has taken some of his winnings and invested them in his camp. So his nutritionist, all that kind of stuff. He told Brett Okamoto he's 136 pounds as of Tuesday, and normally he enters at about 143 pounds on fight week. So when you're looking at those small weight classes, that's 7 pounds. You know, if he's being truthful, you never know if these guys are there's a little bit of gamesmanship here, but if he's being truthful, that's a big part, and you can expect him to have an easier weight cut. I don't think that'll sap his power too much, but what it will help him will be in the later round of his fights and, you know, continuing that cardio through the pace, because those guys that cut so much have a really tough time in general. And I would argue that if there is a path to victory for Perez, it's to outlast him, not get knocked out, and then really turn up the wrestling in rounds 4 and 5 and kind of cruise to a decision. That would be the path for Perez if there is one. I don't see that happening. I think Figueiredo, like you said, is getting better, and he's only going to continue to get better, and I think that he's going to continue to widen the gap between him and the rest of the other flyweights. So I think the pick here easily for both of us is Figueiredo, but I will say that Perez, there's an angle here on DraftKings if you want to get a little bit of exposure here, because 4.68 significant strikes landed per minute, that, you know, that's a solid amount even for these lower weight class divisions. And he averages over a takedown per round. That's 3.03 per 15 minutes are the numbers there. So his volume striking in wrestling is excellent. It's, you know, it's something that in any other fight, especially in the smaller cage, you look at Perez. So while the picks both Figueiredo, I think we got to ask, John, I mean, like, in 100 DraftKings lineups, you know, you kind of said you'd fade this fight, so you can be a little bit low on that. But, I mean, how much exposure would you be looking to get with someone like Perez?
Probably. I would still probably go, like, less than maybe 10%, mm-hmm. You know. Although I will – another thing in his favor is I imagine he's going to be extremely low-owned. So, you know, that's – that if you're one of those big GP tournament type players, that's something you can look at. Look, everything in this fight seems about right to me. The odds, the, you know, the Vegas salaries, all that. It pretty much essentially, I might have the odds to finish a little higher, a little lower, I should say. Besides that, everything looks essentially right.
Yeah, right on. So definitely some type of exposure if you're going to mass enter. And of course, you got to be pretty contrarian here if you want to take down. It's a pretty big tournament this week. You know, they had trouble filling the Fight Island, the Khabib Gaethje ones, because it was kind of an afternoon start time. And I think that took people back a little bit. You know, we're back to the 10 Eastern kind of start time, regular pay-per-view time. And they've got a big GPP with $150,000 as the top prize. So if you want a piece of that, chances are you're going to need something weird to happen, and you're going to need to capitalize off that here. And I definitely like Perez a little bit better as far as title fight underdogs than someone like Jennifer Maia. So we'll talk about that one next. We got, of course, Valentina Shevchenko, the champion, coming off a little bit of an injury, which kind of delayed this fight a bit. But she's going to be taking on Jennifer Maia in the women's flyweight division. Shevchenko is the most expensive fighter on the card, and I would say rightfully so at $9,600. Maia is just $6,600. So if you punt that spot, then you can get yourself five favorites here. And the Vegas odds line right up with that. Shevchenko -1400 last time I looked, which was yesterday, bringing it up again, coming back down to earth a little bit at -1300 in some of the more popular sports books. But I'm also seeing her around -1700 at Caesars William H, which is, I know, what the one the UFC tends to use a little bit. So huge favorite. This is basically even wider than like Rousey Holm or whatever when that happened. Of course, I use that example because it's fun. But the odds to finish here are -260. I mean, there's no question here that both of our picks is going to be Valentina Shevchenko. She's just a class above in all aspects of the game. I would be willing to wager just about anything that this will be a unanimous selection. When it comes to the RotoWire contributor picks that we'll post here on Thursday. But the real question at this point is, yeah, Shevchenko's going to win, but, you know, to get 11-12x on DraftKings, which you probably need for GPPs, I mean, you're going to need her to score 120, 130 points, and I don't know if the fight goes that long here. So what do you think about Valentina at that price tag?
It's a lot. It's we talk about this all the time. It's the ultimate risk, because if for some reason it doesn't pay off, if the finish doesn't come as quickly, or she takes one bad step and blows at her knee, you're finished. So it's a risk. It sounds terrible, but I'm going to go back to, you know, what I go with every time I see a fight like this. If somebody is a minus 1400 favorite, the fight just shouldn't be happening. I find it impossible to believe that the UFC can't find a better option here. But this is essentially where the company is at with this division at this time. It's really non-existent. And the way this fight came about was funny. Shevchenko was supposed to face Joanne Calderwood at UFC 250 in June. Shevchenko got hurt and was forced to withdraw.
Yep.
And Calderwood could have sat on the sideline and waited until Shevchenko got healthy and still probably got her title shot. She didn't. She wanted to stay active, and Maya stepped in for Shevchenko and fought Calderwood and beat her. So now here we are. I don't think it's a stretch to say Shevchenko might, with Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, for all intents and purposes, at least for now, retired. I really think Shevchenko is the most dominant fighter in the sport today. At least as far as dominating her division, there is not anybody in this division who can come remotely close to her. She is exceptional at everything. We rarely see her ground game. She's mostly just a Muay Thai fighter, simply because she has the ability on the feet to overwhelm everybody she goes up against. But she's a complete all-around mixed martial artist, and there's nothing in Maya's background that would lead me to believe that she can make this fight close. The Metsera over GSP, that was the example I used in my preview article. Those fights happen, and those results do happen, but you know, they're called miracles, and they're once in a lifetime results for good reason. It's really, really difficult to envision any scenario in which Maya stays competitive here. I dug a little deeper to try and find something as far as, you know, maybe Maya's taller. She's not. Shevchenko is 7 months older. They're the same age. Valentina is actually an inch taller and has a 2-inch reach edge. So, you know, you really, really, really have to dig deep to find any path. I'm not even going to say a path to victory, just any sort of path for Maya to keep this fight competitive. And whether or not Shevchenko is of use to you in DraftKings at 9,600 is pretty much the result of, you know, it's up to you as far as what risk you're willing to take. There's such a good chance she's going to win and win quickly that I think you have to get a piece of her in some form or fashion. There's a certain risk, because if you use her in any lineup, you're going to have to find a bunch of underdogs, and obviously that makes it risky. You know, I'd much rather spend the extra, $600, mm-hmm. and take a shot on Perez as an underdog than I would Maya. This division, it's non-existent, really.
I agree.
I don't have any, you know, it's tough to even come up with anything.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing that really anybody, maybe we'll see if Jessica Andrade eventually challenges Valentina. She recently moved up a weight class. That one could be a little interesting. Valentina will have massive height and reach advantages, and we might actually see that one go to the ground. But yeah, this one's Valentina all along here. I have to mention that Maya has also had her fair share of weight cutting issues in the past. She, of course, made weight for the Calderwood fight, but had previously missed weight for fights against Caitlin Chookagian, and there's one more in there that she missed weight here. I believe it was Vivian Aruaho. No. The opponent changed it. Never mind. But she's missed weight multiple times, and of course, Maya finally got back on track there. Weigh-ins might be a mess. on Friday morning. You're going to have to watch out for that if you make your DraftKings lineups earlier in the week. Though I imagine if anything were to happen with this fight, they would look earlier on the undercard to a fight we'll talk about in a little bit. Caitlin Chookagian, Cynthia Calvillo. One of those, I'd imagine, would get the call. Probably Calvillo because she's coming off a win to challenge Shevchenko, and I'm sure Shevchenko would have no problem with either of those opponents anyway. But let's quit hypotheticals for a second. Let's say this fight goes on its plan. Shevchenko, 9,600. Certainly don't mind using her, and while it'll be tough to hit value at that price, you definitely have to have a strong lean on some other underdogs if you want to go that way. For DraftKings purposes, you know, removing eye test aside, and you gave me blind fighters, you'd maybe want to look at a guy like Luis Cose, who was recently on Contender Series. He is 9,300 instead of 9,600. And of course, you're chasing GPPs here. The Cose, he's fighting a newcomer, Sasha Polatnikov, in like the very first fight of the night, or one of the early ones. And yeah, you have a little bit of unknown risk here, but the numbers, you know, Kosei has a better inside the distance prop. We have in the betting section of RotoWire MMA, we get like round by round props from four different sports books. And right now, FanDuel is the only one that is up there. But according to the FanDuel sportsbook, Kosei is -185 to get a first round finish, and Shevchenko is +1,000 to get a first round finish, which, that seems a little bit wide to me, but you know, nonetheless, you know, these props can get heavily influenced by a couple sharps coming in and moving those lines a little bit. So that's a wide enough gap for me. So yeah, I mean, in your mass entry, you have some Shevchenko, but you probably want to be a little bit under the field in chasing some of those finishing marks. I mean, Figueroa is the same way here when it comes to that. I mean, obviously, the Figueroa's +195 to get it done in round one. And, you know, that's on FanDuel. BetMGM has Figueroa at +190. PointsBet, another partner, you know, of ours, is +220. So, yeah, so I'd look to Figueroa over Shevchenko, save the $600, and hope for a better shot at the finish. So, I mean, the pick across the board here, Shevchenko, there's no doubt about that, but it's just a matter of, can she get the 120, 130 DraftKings points you need to really cash in on this? And that's a tougher ask than just winning the fight for sure.
It definitely is. But again, if you make multiple lineups, you got to get a piece for somewhere, because if she does get that quick win, it's something you got to have a piece of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the quick win, of course, would have to involve a knockdown or multiple knockdowns, maybe passing guard or something along that sort before getting the finish here, and maybe with some work on the feet before that to really kind of set all that up. Because, yeah, there's, you know, you can win quick in the first 30 seconds, but sometimes winning in the 4.5 mark is more advantageous for scoring, and that's why we got such an interesting game of variance here. Let's move on, though. Welterweight matchup here, setting up the title fights. Someone everybody knows, for good or bad reasons, Mike Perry will be taking on Tim Means. Perry's 8,200 on DraftKings. Means is 8,000. So there's a lot, you know, the gap's much tighter here. Perry's a -150 betting favorite. That's still the case. The comeback back on Means, +130. Odds to finish, -180. This one I was a little bit torn upon, John, but I'll let you go first. What's your take here?
Yeah, I was too. This was supposed to be Perry and Robbie Lawler. Lawler got injured and Tim Means stepped in. You know, I think it's pretty clear. We've seen enough from Mike Perry now. He's 13 fights with the company for over 4 years. He's got a 7-6 record. It's pretty clear Mike Perry is a one-dimensional boxer. He has a bunch of power. He's durable as all heck. But his fight IQ is questionable, and he's the kind of guy who is willing to eat a punch in order to land two of his own. And when you start facing better competition, that just doesn't work. We say it all the time. He's going up against a guy in Tim Means who is pretty inconsistent in his own right. Means is going to be 37 coming up, alternated wins and losses in his past six fights. Means can mix in a submission here and there. They primarily came earlier in his career. Obviously, the one thing Means has over Perry is the experience edge. He has more than twice as many pro fights. You know, Means has been around a long time. He's fought Jorge Masvidal. He fought Neil Magny. He fought Matt Brown back when Matt Brown was good. You know, so Means has been in there with a bunch of guys. This I would guess is going to be a kickboxing match. I would favor Perry in that for two reasons. One being he has more knockout power. There's no doubt about that. And Perry is much more durable. I have a really hard time thinking that Means is going to come in and knock Perry out. I think Perry's going to land plenty of his own offense. You know, regular readers of our work on RotoWire will not, I'm no big Mike Perry supporter. I don't think there's any long-term winning streak coming up. But this seems to be a pretty good matchup for him, at least on paper. If you're in the Means corner, and he's a reasonable play at 8,000. He's bigger. He's longer. But I think Perry has much quicker hands. And again, it's the durability thing. I don't think if this is a stand-up fight, I don't think Means is going to be able to get Perry out of there quickly. And in a fight where I imagine both guys are going to land plenty of offense, that certainly favors the guy who's more durable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you here. I'm gonna go the other way, though. I'm going to go with Means on this fight. We'll start with, you know, kind of the slightly analytical part, and then there's a whole narrative-based approach here that you have to go. First off, you mentioned the size difference. Perry being a pure boxer here, he'll be going up against someone who's got 4 inches in height and 4 inches in reach on that. So, you know, Perry will have to work the body, work the uppercut, you know, do what he always does and, you know, make some sacrifices to get inside on someone like Means. Statistically, Means throws higher volume in terms of significant strikes landed per minute, 4.92 to 4.36. And the defense for Means is much better. Means actually has a positive striking differential of, you know, when you take your significant strikes absorbed or landed minus those absorbed, you know, so Means only absorbs 3.53 while Perry's at 4.41. But you know that fits inside with the whole narrative here. The real thing that gets me, though, is Mike Perry has had some tax issues. And he's, you know, he's very frank and very blunt about that. He's, of course, had, you know, anger management, and there's all these other accusations that, you know, we can't, it's all alleged for now, but he's admitted up front to, you know, having some problems, you know, saving for his taxes. So he's been trying to save a little money, and his last fight, he had nobody but his girlfriend in his corner. And, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, that's pretty smart. A lot of, like, what fighters really listen to their corner anyway, you know, is kind of the people that supported that going. And it's going to be the same situation here. His girlfriend, now pregnant, will be in his corner. And according to Ariel Helwani, he has one other friend that has just a longtime friend that hasn't been, that isn't associated with the fight game here.
So essentially, he has no corner.
He has no corner. Exactly. He has no corner. And, you know, that means he didn't, I mean, I'm sure he trained somewhere, but did he really pay for a fight camp of any way, shape, or form?
Didn't Darren Till offer to corner him? What happened with that?
I don't know. That was something. I think Dana maybe stepped in and shut that down a little bit. Darren Till was supposed to corner him. He was going to have Cam Soda send him two porn stars to corner him. I think that kind of got shut down by his girlfriend.
That would have been
funny. He was basically saying, like, all right, whoever pays me the most money, I'll let them corner him, you know, kind of falling in line with this whole theme. And man, this is crazy entertaining for the fans aspect to see this. But I mean, okay, so he got by, he beat Mickey Gall, and, you know, Mickey Gall, you know, I got enough respect for him, his ground game, but as long as he's in a stand-up battle with Mike Perry, he got caught, and, you know, for what that's worth, Mickey Gall was knocked out by Diego Sanchez a couple fights ago, and, you know, Perry had lost his two fights beforehand. Not that Means is a massive, massive step up in competition, but for me, it comes down to give me the guy who had a real training camp, who has real coaches in his corner, over the guy that's just winging it to save, you know, 20 grand. So, the narrative is enough for me to throw Means in there. DraftKings-wise, Means gets he has enough volume to, you know, maybe think about doing something good to get in enough scoring, even if he doesn't finish him. But, you know, I'll take the plus money guy, the underdog here against Perry, just because I don't think that system he's got going is going to work forever.
No, it probably won't, but there are advantage plus and minuses to both guys. But no, you make a good point. He's certainly, we'll just say the good way to sum it up is, regardless of what happens, the way Mike Perry is going about this whole thing is unorthodox.
Yes.
So we'll see how that works out for him.
He hasn't quite went the Diego Sanchez full-on route and had a life guru in his corner, but it's definitely heading that way if he's going to auction up the corner spot. But
yeah, okay. He's essentially coaching himself.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, depending on some type of fighters, hey, maybe that works. You know, how, if you asked him, he might say, who really listens to the corner that much anyway? But again, I'm skeptical here. Let's move on, though. Women's flyweight matchup here. I think the narrative on this one is pretty straightforward, but we'll run it down for you here. Caitlin Chookagian, Cynthia Calvillo. Calvillo is a 8,700 on DraftKings. Chookagian, 7,500. Calvillo, minus 255. Come back on Chookagian, plus 215. I mentioned two fights with plus money odds to finish here. This is one of them, plus 240 odds to finish here. Calvillo, Chookagian, how do you see this one, John?
Another one, fairly straightforward. I'm not big on Caitlin Chookagian. This is going to be her fourth fight of 2020, which, considering everything that's going on, is pretty impressive. It's going to be her fifth fight in just over 15 months. She fought Valentina Shevchenko for the UFC Women's Flyweight Championship, which should tell you about all you need to know about the division these days. And then Chookagian, after fighting Valentina, defeated Valentina's younger sister, Antonina, who also fights Saturday, and then was quickly knocked out by Jennifer Maia in her most recent fight just last month. Chookagian is comfortably in the top five of the division, and that says a lot more about the division than it does about Chookagian. She's 7-4 with the company. All seven victories have come via decision. She has no power and no ground game. She's tall, 5'9" for the division, but she's also 30. She'll be 32 years of age in December. There's just not a whole lot going here. On the other side, Calvillo at least is a little bit interesting. She returned to flyweight this past June and took unanimous decision from Jessica Ai. You know, Ai's really weak in the stand-up, and Calvillo's tough and always well-conditioned. So that alone was enough for Calvillo to win that fight, and I'm fairly sure that was a five-round main event, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she put up over 130 DraftKings points in that one via four takedowns and 113 significant strikes landed. It was basically take her down and pound it out. I mean, Ai's tough enough to not get finished, but that was all Calvillo's fight, and it was pretty one-way.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the one thing you'll say about Chookagian here is that she's 5 inches taller, and she has been in the octagon against significantly better competition. I'm still not going to pick her. I'm going to take Calvillo, and I have two main reasons. The first being Calvillo averages about 1.97 takedowns per 15 minutes, which is a decent number. And then you go to the flip side, and Chookagian defends takedowns at just 48%, which is terrifying. I could certainly see a scenario in which Calvillo scores a couple takedowns in the beginning of each round and just grinds Chookagian out on the ground. And then there is the flip side on that is Chookagian provides virtually no value at 7,500 simply because her style of fighting just isn't conducive to DraftKings production. Mm-hmm. Calvillo is never going to be mistaken for an offensive juggernaut, but she averages 86.4 DraftKings points a fight. Chookagian somehow averages just 50.9 DraftKings points a fight. That is not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm picking Calvillo. I think it's going to be pretty close to Calvillo, unanimous from what I've seen as far as the staff picks coming in. Yeah, it just all comes back to that 48% takedown defense for Chookagian by me in her last fight, steamrolled by Jessica Andrade, you know, taken down twice, basically knocked out. The wrestling game, you know, might be getting a little bit better with Chookagian, given how she was able to take down Antonina Shevchenko three times. But then she faced an actual wrestling-based opponent like Andrade and basically got worked. I think Calvillo is going to work her too. You know, in a 100 lineup situation, you maybe consider a little Calvillo exposure, but I don't know. There's so many fights here that are expected to finish in this smaller cage. There are so many fighters with some big power in their hands. Maybe Calvillo can work a submission in or something and get a big score, in which case she might be an okay leverage play. But I'm not big on her on DraftKings, despite picking her to win pretty clear cut. I mean, Chookagian's so tall. These her opponents just kind of pin her legs together, and then it's easier to tip her over. You know, she's a kind of a fun fighter to watch if you get someone that's going to just like stand up and kickbox with her. I mean, her technique is there. That aspect of her game is, you know, approaching world class, but mixed martial arts, man, you got to be able to defend your takedowns and that doesn't seem like it's going to be the case here. One more fight on the main card here to talk about. Light heavyweight matchup, Shogun Hua, Paul Craig. For the life of me, I cannot understand why the UFC needed to run back this split draw from almost exactly 1 year ago. But here we are, Paul Craig, 8,500. Shogun, 7,700. Betting odds, Craig minus 165. Comeback on Shogun, plus 145. I didn't see this fight getting too close to a finish last time when it went all 15 minutes, but we've got odds to finish around minus 120. That might even out a little bit here. This one is tough on paper. It should be Craig's fight, but can the old vet get a upset here at the age of 39?
I think he can. And you pretty much, you answered your own question. They're running it back because it was a draw the first time. But you're right. And I think it's more the fact that, you know, neither guy has a whole heck of a lot going on, and they just thought, why the heck not? I'll start with Shogun because I'm taking him in an upset. Shogun is somehow 5-1-1 in his past seven fights, which is mind-boggling. It's ugly. You know, they're rarely pretty victories. His most recent bout in July, he fought Lil Nog in Nog's retirement bout, and he won via split decision. It wasn't pretty. Shogun, it will be 39 just 4 days after this event. So, what, this time next week? So, he's essentially 39. Shogun's a stand-up fighter, has been his entire career. He still has a little bit of power in his hands. But, sure. like most older guys, the footwork has evaporated, and he has difficulty getting his head off the center line, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Like I mentioned, he is 5-1-1 in his past seven. I'd be willing to bet a significant amount that the next seven fights go worse than the prior seven. Mm-hmm. But again, neither of these guys have a whole heck of a lot going on, so I can understand the rematch, I guess. If you want to look at Paul Craig, essentially the opposite of Shogun. He's been with UFC for about 4 years. Records barely above 500, 5-4-1. The opposite of Shogun in the sense that Craig's entire offensive arsenal is based on the mat. He has 12 career submission wins. He has very, very little power, and he has a questionable chin. So you would theoretically think any prolonged kickboxing match would favor Shogun, but Craig actually did surprisingly well on the feet in the first fight between these two guys. I thought Shogun actually won that the first one, but it was close. You would think Shogun should have an edge in the stand-up. I ended up taking Shogun essentially because I just thought the value was right. This is more or less a pick'em for me, and for some reason, Craig is $800 more on DraftKings than Shogun, so I figured, what the heck. I just thought the value looked right, and when you're looking at a striker versus mat specialist type situation, I usually take the striker simply because it's easier to predict a knockout than it is to predict a submission.
Yeah. Yeah, so this one, you know, I think I'm going to stay away from on DraftKings entirely because we have a whole full 15 minutes of sample size to see what these guys do. And if there's not a finish in this fight, it's not going to be high scoring. You know, the last significant strike total was 51 for Paul Craig to 25 for Shogun. Sure, you could argue that Shogun's did a little bit more damage. Of course, you know, that's how some of the judges saw it. But, you know, even if you take the best score out of that and give them the decision bonus, you know, you've got a takedown for each of them. So you're looking at, I don't know, 25 for striking, 30 throw on the takedown, probably a couple advances in there. You know, you're looking at 60, 70 points for the winner. That's not going to get you. That's not going to get you anywhere on DraftKings, especially 8,500. So I see where you're coming from. If you got to go somebody, maybe take the underdog and ride with Shogun and see what happens. But I just think, I mean, there's 7 years apart. Or 6 years apart, basically. At this stage of the career, you know, it's going to affect the 39-year-old a little bit more than the 33-year-old. If the last fight was a draw where Craig was outlanding him that much, I don't see how Shogun goes and improves upon this performance steadily. I mean, he fought Rogerio Nogueira in his last fight. He won the decision, but it was a split decision, and it went all 15 minutes. You know, the fact that you can't put away Lil Nog at this stage in his career is a little bit concerning to me. So I don't know if Shogun necessarily gets the win or gets the finish. And even if he does doesn't get the finish, like, you're just not looking at a high volume scoring. So this probably, this is one that, you know, not so much for me on DraftKings. I'm picking Craig because of the, some of those intangible factors I mentioned below. I don't feel great about it. It's a tight, low scoring fight and probably one that I'll be staying away from.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't think there's, you know, this probably, if we're being honest, probably shouldn't be on the main card of a pay-per-view. It's just, it's a fight with just little upside from any kind of ranking standpoint or whatever, and it would appear, at least on the surface, to have a pretty wide range of outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one fight I wanted to talk about that I was surprised didn't quite make the pay-per-view. It's another flyweight. You know, we've got a couple of, there's a couple of flyweight women's fight, and there's at least this one men's fight on the undercard here. You know, good insurance policies for the main event, I guess you could say. But so when Figueiredo was supposed to fight Garbrandt, Alex Perez came in and took Garbrandt's place. Alex Perez was supposed to fight Brandon Moreno on this card, and, you know, that was basically there to determine the next flyweight contender. Moreno had picked up back-to-back wins against Kai Kara of France and the since released Juicier Formiga, and so we had Brandon Royval now come in to take the place of Perez and fight Moreno. Brandon Royval, relative newcomer, 2-0 in the UFC. This is one that for me, John, and I think if I remember correctly, you might have the upset too. Royval is 7,600 on DraftKings. Moreno's up there a little bit at 8,600, and I'm seeing a lot more value on Royval.
I'm with you. This is probably the fight. I mean, actually, even if you take into account the main event and co-main event, this is certainly one of the more entertaining fights on the card, and it's one of the fights on the card, other than the title fights, that actually has a legitimate chance to impact the title picture. Mm-hmm. If you look at Brandon Moreno, like you mentioned, he was supposed to face Alex Perez. I never viewed Moreno as a legitimate title contender simply because of the lack of power in his hands. I mentioned Figueiredo earlier and how one of the things that makes me very optimistic about him moving forward is the kind of power in his hands. Moreno does not have that power. In 23 career fights, he has two knockout wins, which quite honestly just isn't enough to be considered, you know, a true contender. He's a pretty decent wrestler, 1.75 takedowns per 15 minutes, 10 career submission victories. But I can't help but think that if he ever did end up fighting a guy like Figueiredo, he would get overwhelmed on the feet. I think a good portion of Moreno's future value is tied to the fact he won't be 27 years old until next month. So I think that's probably the main thing he has going for him. Royval is in a good spot here. This is a guy who's been with the UFC for less than 6 months. He made his UFC debut in May as a really late notice replacement and submitted Tim Elliott. Royval looked really, really bad in that fight, which he admitted. He ended up pulling out the submission, but he didn't look good at all. Late September was the second fight against Kai Kara France, who you previously mentioned. Royval got a full camp in that for that fight, looked much better, and obviously won that too. Yeah. I think he has a little more power. I think, obviously, we have a bit more sample size on Moreno. Our sample size on Royval is all of about 6 minutes. Even if you don't want to take Royval out, I'm going to take Royval outright, but even if you don't, I think he's definitely a decent value at 7,600. He's proven he can fight. He's had a full camp here. Maybe not a full camp, but certainly the Perez-Garbrandt switch was made quite a while ago. He's not taking this fight on a couple weeks' notice. Mm-hmm. So he's had a decent amount of time, and you know, I think he has a pretty decent chance to pull in the upset. But this is one of the rare fights on this card that actually has a legitimate chance to impact some kind of title picture.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, after the Elliott fight, I remember very vividly watching the Royval Elliott fight and Elliott just coming out and working him in the first round, and never thought that highly of Elliott. And then Royval kind of, you know, snuck away and got the submission, so he got the win. So I mean, myself and very many staff members, you know, except for shout out to Joe, we all picked Kara France in that fight. We're like, oh, City Kickboxing. You know, those guys have been, you know, just on a crazy tear, pretty undefeated lately. You know, we picked Kai Kara France, and Brandon Royval was dominant there. It was night and day. So I'm just seeing the trajectory that Royval's on seems to have him clashing with a title fight at some point, maybe towards the end of 2021 if he can keep this up. So, yeah, I like him there. Is there anybody else on the card that really stood out to you as guys that could help you get, you know, Shevchenko, Figueiredo, Kosei, however you want to do this? Anybody else on the card that, you know, could possibly help you free up some space, or was there not really anyone that jumped out too much?
I guess there were two I thought were worth mentioning. One, it was Jared Gooden against Alan Jobin. Gooden is 7,900. Jobin is 8,300. The one thing about Jobin is he's a big, strong guy, as we all know, but he gets hit a lot. He always has. Kind of a brawler, not the best stand-up defense, so maybe Gooden can take advantage of that. And the other one I picked out is Nicholas Dalby against Daniel Rodriguez. Dalby is certainly an underdog, 7,100. Rodriguez is 9,100. Dalby's plus 265. Rodriguez is minus 310. But Dalby is actually pretty good. He's probably a little bit better than those odds would indicate. He's shown pretty well in his UFC career. He's getting up there. He turned 36 years old last week. But he has a win over Cowboy Oliveira. He back in the day in his first UFC run, he took a split decision from Elize Zaleski Dos Santos. He actually fought Darren Till to a majority draw. So fight Till to a draw back in the day. So, you know, look, would I pick him out right? No, but if you're trying to work a guy in your lineup at 7,100, I think there are worse bets.
Yeah. Yeah, I might have overlooked this because, you know, all I can remember lately is Daniel Rodriguez, you know, kind of rolling through Dwight Grant. I guess Gabriel Green was a decision. Tim Means he knocked out. So, you know, my recent memory of Daniel Rodriguez, D-Rod, is like, oh, man, you know, that's tough. He's got that weird 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu kind of technique rolling for him, so he's creative. But, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I could maybe get on board with that in a small percentage of lineups there. And I'm with you on Gooden, too, because I think you're going to see some line value here, maybe. Gooden's plus 125 at 7,900, so that's kind of right, but I don't know, might see these guys at weigh-ins. I mean, Gooden is 6'4" himself, so, you know, we mentioned Joe Bain's a big, strong guy, but Gooden, you know, right there with him. Gooden's only 26 years old, Joe Bain's 37 years old, and so, I mean, there's a big difference there. Again, it's not like the odds are too far apart there, but I think I'd look after Jared Gooden a little bit. It just seems like, I don't know, Alan Jobin I've always thought of as, you know, maybe a little bit more of a male model than a fighter, especially of late, losing three out of his last four. I mean, he beat Ben Saunders, who everybody has, lost to Dwight Grant, lost to Nico Price. That's a respectable loss. Lost to Gunnar Nelson, beat Mike Perry. I mean, he's beaten some good guys. Bilal Muhammad's on there.
He also doesn't fight much.
Yeah, exactly. So he's very much, it'll be pretty much a year and a half since he last fought. And, you know, looking at Gooden here, it's his UFC debut. He fought in July with Titan FC, fought in February with Empire Fighting Championship. So he's been definitely more active. Younger fighter, more active, actually a bigger fighter, which is rare. I guess we'll have to watch him on the scales then. But yeah, overall, it just seems like Gooden could be a guy that frees up some salary for you. I love 7,900. That works for me. That's going to about do it for the card. Anything else you got to add on this one?
No, you know, if we're being honest, this is a little bit thinner than we're used to, but, you know, you got a couple title fights, and I think you might get some decent, you know, obviously not title impacting fights on the undercard, but I think there are some pretty decent, you know, brawling type fights on the undercard where you should get some action.
I gotcha. Well, here, you hear that? That's me knocking on wood, hoping everything holds up here for weigh-ins and for everything at UFC Las Vegas. Been a little bit of a mess lately, but hopefully we can keep these title fights together. Thanks again for listening then to the RotoWire MMA podcast brought to you by ESPN Plus, the exclusive home of UFC 255. Once again, he's John Litterin. You can follow him on Twitter at JonLitterine. I'm Jake Litarski. Follow me at RotoJake. We got a good one to come back to in December, December 12th, UFC 256. You know, we lose Megan Anderson and Amanda Nunes, but we get Piotr Jan and Aljamain Sterling on December 12th. That's an excellent fight. I can't wait to talk about that with you, John.
Yeah, that should be a good one. That's only, what, 3 weeks away or so. It's getting there.
Yeah, holiday season, fight season as well. Thanks again then for listening, everyone.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done.
At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.